Hi, welcome to my podcast. I'm Dr. Lauren Goodall. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this is Psychology in Short. Today's topic is going to be affairs, more specifically in the research called extramarital affairs. Okay, but before we go there, I'm going to let you know about my webpage, which is drlaurengoodall.com, and there you can feel free to place some comments or some feedback or topics of interest for future podcasts. So love to hear from you in that venue. Also let you know that I have a book out. It's called Bipolar's Not an STD, and it's available on Amazon. And it discusses mood disorders, personality disorders, and relationship sticking points, so to speak. All right, so let's get this rolling. I'm going to start off with research that's out there, and then I'm going to add in some of my experience as a clinician, as a psychologist in the chair. So let's start. So this research piece has said extramarital sex partners are likely to be close friends and men are more apt to cheat. That's the title of the article. It's by Doug McPherson in April of 2018. And he talks about research from Colorado U Boulder by researchers Lindsay LeBrec and Mark Wissman, in which it's discussed that people seek out partners that are familiar. Once again, that term familiar pops up. Now that's what we discussed in a previous podcast. But familiarity, friends, bosses, and people that they've been able to establish some emotional intimacy with. So that tells you something, that people aren't just looking for random people. They want some level of emotional comfort, and some level of emotional intimacy has already taken place. And it says that 21% of men will experience infidelity in their lifetime, but by 2016, that number decreased to 16.3%. And then there's some other work here by Stephen Betchen, and he's done a significant amount of work in this area as well. And he says, hey, most affairs start with commiserating, okay? That's that whole part of establishing some level of, misery, complaint, dissatisfaction. And so he starts talking about that as being sort of a starting point, or a mutual starting point. Let's put it that way. He's talking about mutuality here. And some of his research is interesting, or his writing is interesting, that I'll say. He says, you know, we really need to look at the marital dyad, meaning both the partners, because society loves to come out and say, hey, this is the cheater, and, you know, this is the problem, this is the person who's the problem. But he comes out and says, hey, it takes two to produce an affair, but he is talking about the marital relationship and different lacks in that marital relationship. So when people say it takes two, we're not talking about a side party or a third party. We're talking about within the marital union right there. And now he says, presuming that you're not dealing with a serial cheater or somebody who's got some real pathological issues going on, most affairs, the complaints are generally differences in incompatibility in sex, in their sex life. Lack of attention, and I like this one, unmet expectations. That's a big one. Unmet expectations is obvious, where you think you are going to be able to have some aspects preserved in your relationship, and they don't seem to be presenting themselves. That's what I'm defining unmet expectations as. But there's obviously that has psychological and physical ramifications. So talking about that, now we've seen some research that says, hey, this is more of a male thing, but with this type of research, we have to keep in mind there is a lot of underreporting. Not everybody likes to just say, hey, I'm going to fill out that research. So we have to keep that in mind. So getting accurate statistics in this venue, probably not the easiest to get. Okay, so this article by Psychology Today, The Dirty Truth About Sex, Power, and Extramarital Affairs. And this is by Sam Somners, September of 2011. And he was looking at some Dutch researchers surveyed over 1,500 professionals. And they're looking for power, gender, and infidelity. And more than 26% confess to having cheated on a partner. But what was interesting about this was there really was no statistical difference between men and women. So they were looking at the issue of maybe as more power is coming into the equation, women are just as likely to be involved in this type of extramarital activity. And hypotheses were linking power with more confidence to attract a potential partner that they think is interesting. Of interest, I should say. So, let's see. Oh, this was an interesting one. How do affairs end usually? This is by Regain, the Regain edit team of December of 22. And this starts to talk about not just issues in the marital dyad per se, but, you know, what the person who's cheating may be experiencing. They can have longstanding issues with intimacy, communication, and commitment. Now, this idea of communication is not novel. Dr. John Gottman, as I love to talk about a lot of his work with couples and such, he has established, he says, affairs don't cause divorces. You would think that would be the number one reason for divorce. He's like, it's not. He's like, basically, he takes apart communication, lousy communication, and other emotional factors that matter in terms of building the relationship. So the importance of understanding that you can have issues going on in the marriage and they can be treatable and they can be fixable. But there are people that do have commitment issues, and those are going to, those may crop up as avoidance, and that's avoidance in communication or not being able to verbalize their needs, and then they step out. Those are some hypotheses in play, clearly not all of the hypothesis. And also there's addictive behavior. Some people are addicted, have addictive patterns. And so if they're using alcohol, substances, things like that, they may be more likely to add this as a companion base, acting out in the relationship, so to speak. But putting that piece aside and just realizing that, hey, this is much more of a marital issue and not necessarily about the third party, and getting to uncover what the issues are, what is not happening, and why people feel that, they cannot connect. And I think a big issue is communication. People don't like confrontation. How many times I would hear somebody say, I wear the pants, it's not an issue. And I'm thinking, wow, no, it is an issue. If both people don't have a voice, that's going to be problematic. And so if there's that need to say, oh, you don't have to worry about him or you don't have to worry about her, it's going to be okay with them, you can't take somebody for granted like that. I think over time, if you do, and just presume that everything you do is going to be okay, I think you're going to one day wake up to this potential. They're either gone or they may take on this acting out situation. So there are no kudos, quote unquote, whether it's a man or a woman, quote, wearing the pants. That just says somebody's got to be super controlling. But I do think there's some unconscious factors that come along in relationships that people are not necessarily aware of. And so, for instance, that whole saying of he says it's okay, that might look like, or she says it's okay, guys might be going out and going on their fifth fishing trip for the year and just kind of assuming that the wife is going to be okay, hanging out with the toddlers, and she's usually okay, she'll be okay, she'll be fine, kind of those types of answers. I think just because somebody isn't pushing back fiercely at you doesn't mean it's generally okay with them. And the flip side of that, I've also seen where it could be on the male side or the female side, where the parents or the in-laws like to just kind of step into the marriage to be involved with a lot of the caretaking for the grandchildren. And at first that brings a lot of relief and it's welcome, but it usually comes a point where it's not so appreciated, and the opposite parent the opposite parent of the in-laws is starting to feel very invisible or lacks a voice, and they either continue to shrink until there's some pushback. And so sometimes if your partner is very agreeable, do not mistake kindness for weakness. That would be a really bad idea. And don't necessarily overtake someone. Some people use a lot of direct control methods to get their way, and other people are master manipulators. They're very good at the subtle use of manipulation. And I think that's manipulation is a very aggressive act, although it's presented in a very mild manner. Let's not forget the fact that this it's an aggressive act. It's very controlling at its root. So how many times people will sit there and say, hey, this guy, he's cheated on me, he's no good. But you really need to take both people into account and talk about what's been happening in this relationship and what is not usually happening. And what's usually not happening is some level of emotional closeness, some level of validation, okay? And the problem of invisibility, where, it doesn't seem to matter what you say. They just assume you're going to be agreeable to it, or that their way is their way. That's not a good thing. So lousy communication, I'm going to say, is a big one. Of course, agreements in terms of physical intimacy needs need to be kind of hammered out and figured out. And really, people get more confident in a relationship when you have some disagreement. How are you going to be confident if you never have in your problem solving if you are always in agreement? You can't develop a sense of confidence with it. So you start to feel stronger in your relationship as you work through issues. But for a lot of people, the whole idea of conflict is they'd rather shut it down and hope it goes away. But conflict does not go away like that, as we know. And if it doesn't, get directly addressed, then there's going to be some type of fallout for sure. And affairs is just one form of acting out. And one of the things that I've come across, I'm going to throw some of what I've seen, is that people say, oh, I need to know all the details. I have to, so I can organize it in my head. And I say, no, you don't. Okay. Well, this is about our honesty. I'm like, no, this is about your control. Okay, this is not helping your equation. Checking his phone, for example, 50 times is not building your trust. Well, I need to feel like I can trust him. Well, there's just, you're either going to trust him or you're not going to trust him. And it's actually going to take you a while to trust him. But just grabbing a person's stuff, stalking them, spying on them, is not making them feel emotionally closer to you. If anything, you're shooting them out the door, okay? So keep that in mind. The other thing is don't go after the outside party. And Stephen Betchen also talks about that. You know, harassing whoever so-and-so is involved with, it is really not a good idea. The real issue is between the marital folks, the people who have the commitment together to figure out what's going on. So, you know, having to hear every detail is not a worthy pursuit. Nobody gets through it like that. It's going to be a matter of restarting a trust and deciding to put a trust forward. The other thing that I think is problematic is hearing, well, you know, I put the kids first. We put the kids first. You almost put the kids first to the point where you have no relationship left. Because as soon as those kids are grown, it's going to be like divorce papers, okay? You agree to just get by, and then what? You know, I think it's important to be able to not have parents as invisible. I think that's, parents have to feel validated and supported. And I also believe, like, if mom has, for example, some postpartum issues, how is she going to, meaning she's depressed, she's anxious, she's insecure about her parenting, okay? How is she going to be an effective parent under that venue? You take care of mom first and make sure she's attended to as well. The same with dad. These issues that are not being addressed, no matter what they are going to creep over into your parenting role. But eventually, you're either going to stay partnered or not stay partnered. But that depends on your ability to, you know, to be able to communicate, the ability to keep some level of emotional intimacy and some level of physical intimacy, as well as affection in the relationship. So those, I think, are pretty important pieces, as well as, you know, when people don't have regard for one another, that's a real problem, dismissing their point of view. And so, you know, partners who do that over time are going to erode their relationships. So those are just some basic gists. So I also am not a fan of blaming outside parties. I'm not saying they were right. What I'm saying is you really need to search in-house and figure out what you've got going on, what needs to be remedied, and, you know, what can't be worked on. One red flag that Stephen Betchen came up with, he said, now, if you have a partner who is cheating on you and has absolutely no remorse about it, that's a huge problem, okay? Huge red flag, okay? That might be where you decide to say, oh, forget this. Because if they have no empathy about their role and how it cost you emotionally, you're going to have a problem. There's no point. It's a sooner rather than later situation. So let's keep that in mind. And I am going to add that statistically speaking, people who run off, who marry the people that they've cheated with, call it, you know, bad karma, bad faith. It is like voodoo on the stats, okay? It does not work out. They say 85 to 90% of the people who marry their lovers, it ends in divorce. Or a simpler word would be it's cursed, okay? It does not work. It does not happen. The piece that what I found what was interesting is that sometimes the people that people are seeking out or the partner that they're seeking out has amazing familiarity to their original spouse. So once again, that familiarity template is huge, at least unconsciously, maybe not always consciously. I mean, consciously you could say, okay, so-and-so looks like something, but there is an inner template that's at work. So I thought that was really interesting. But outside of that, I'm going to say that working with infidelity is definitely something that people heal from. It doesn't have to take over your life. It could just be a way of figuring out what is not working. And, you know, we're all about, at the end of the day, you know, what good is a relationship if you have no security with it and if you have no emotional security? But there's this interesting quote that I found from Maria Gallen. And she's from Theravive, and she says, marriage is not necessarily an all-purpose relationship. No one can meet all the needs all the time of their spouse, which I think is absolutely huge. So in that respect, we cannot take all our inner world and our external world and put it all on our partners. We have to, for instance, if you are a more emotional person, then you need to disperse that with some of your friendships, maybe a therapist, but just not assuming that your partner is supposed to shoulder all of that. And that goes both ways, men and women. You know, even though it's easy to do, to be able to process, well, I like talking with him or I like talking with her because she's really knowledgeable and she's always supportive, that doesn't mean it's always the best idea. In other words, keep a regular form of communication, but be wary. Nobody's marriage is built to carry everything all the time. I thought that was incredibly realistic. And just as a comparison note, I mean, when you think of your friends, you have friends for different reasons, maybe even different interests, but not every friend you have carries all the same beliefs you have or all the same interests you have. So we have different friends. That doesn't mean pick up different partners, but what that does mean is sometimes we have to disperse that stuff that we are, our inner world, with perhaps a therapist, safe people, friends, besides your spouse. And I'm not talking about ratting on your spouse to your friends, because that gets old too. And spouses always figure that out too. If they feel that you are putting them down, that's not a great idea. But a marriage takes work, and it's a mutual effort at the end of the day. And there has to be some mutual trust so that you can move forward. So with that, I guess we'll close it out. And hopefully we've covered this topic to some degree of satisfaction. Although I will say that I think there is an underreporting of infidelity for obvious reasons. But it does look like males and females pretty well compete on this issue. So I no longer think this is a male-dominated venue. All right. So we're going to close up here. And thank you for joining me. And as I said, please feel free to leave some comments at drlaurengoodall.com about future podcasts. Thank you.